Thanks for coming to the Josh Scanlon Podcast, my friends. It is Tuesday, May 29th, 2018. Got a special one for you here today. We're going to talk with Karen Huppertz, who's president of the Georgia chapter for the International Dyslexia Association. What does dyslexia have to do with financial planning? Oh, let me count the ways, my friends. Let me count the ways. Dyslexia, especially if it's unidentified, can lead many a child to wayward activities, which affects society as a whole, never mind just that child in particular and their family, which is a big drain on society's resources, is a big drain on the level of just the ability that is not being used because the dyslexia of the kid has been identified. And of course, it's just a big drain on the incarceration rate, so the financial planning tax rate, that you have to pay to keep these kids incarcerated, it's horrific across the board. And so dyslexia is probably 15% of the general population, maybe 20, probably more towards 15. I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but think about it, that's 1/8 of society today probably has some form of dyslexia. It's a big deal, my friends, and we've got to be able to identify it so we can present solutions so that kids can get the help they need. The old days of putting a kid in a dunce cap and putting him in the side of the room are gone, thank God, and we're removed from that. We have a little bit more compassion, a little bit more understanding, a lot more resources to help children out. But my own instances where the school, nice as they could be, just completely missed the boat on identifying one of my kids' dyslexia. And because of that, the solution was always for more training, the way the training had failed him previously, creating more misery because he was miserable as it was. I mean, think about it. You're a kid. You're not learning how to read. You're falling behind faster and faster behind your peers. And what's the solution? To give you more of what is making you fall behind to begin with, which is just, it's like literally a punishment. And I know there are kids out there today who are being told they need to go to summer school because the regular school didn't train them well enough. So now we're going to send you to summer school when all your other friends are hanging out the pool, watching TV and whatnot, playing games. And you get to go to summer school to learn because you couldn't learn during the regular school. Telling that doesn't break your heart, man. Breaks mine. And luckily, we were able to have the resources to get my child identified with a person who specializes in identifying dyslexics and ADHD and ADD and all that as well. But if you have a child, a boy and girls, what girls will do is they'll shy away. They'll become quiet, not noticeable. They'll slink to the side. Boys, on the other hand, will lash out, try to be class clowns, maybe the bullies. A very big dichotomy there. Girls would kind of just slither away, just unseen, forgotten about. Boys will not be like that. They'll be in your face. They want you to know that they don't care. They're going to lash out, get sent to the principal. And they're going to identify the boys with ADHD. They're going to identify the girls with depression. And we're going to drug them all up when it might well be they just have dyslexia and they don't know how to read. And if we could just give them some reading a skill set to retrain their brain to read the way they properly can, a world will open up in front of them that will benefit all of society. It's amazing. I look at my kid, he's going to sixth grade now, but he's reading The Hobbit, for heaven's sake. I mean, The Hobbit, his IQ is through the roof. He'll never be a good test taker. He'll never have the skill set to tear it up on tests, never will. But he's, in terms of being brilliant, he's absolute brilliant. He can put a Lego together in 2 seconds flat, like you wouldn't believe. He can do it on his own, no issues at all. But get him in front of a test and he freezes up and gets nervous. And it's because he felt like such an idiot in first grade when he couldn't read a basic, simple Bill and Jill book or whatever they have nowadays. He couldn't read it. And he would kick and scream, not want to get out of the car to go to school because it's so embarrassing to him and affecting him till this day. He still has a lot of issues to contend with in terms of his own abilities of being a student, even though he's smart, his IQ is high. So then he gets an 87 in math class and then he takes a test, and a dyslexic kid is supposed to be able to take the test as long as he needs because he just can't comprehend it as fast. He can't. His brain will not allow it. It's like Karen says in the analogy, it's like a kid in a wheelchair. We don't say you can't walk, so we're going to penalize you for not doing the 40 fast. It'd be stupid to say that. We just realize that's a deficiency. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just means it is what it is. And a dyslexic kid cannot process the wording of a test the way a typical kid can. He just can't. So it takes him longer. So my child sitting there told he's only got 5 minutes left, even though he knows he's supposed to have as long as he needs, he freaks out. He's like, wait a second. I'm not nearly done here yet. And he panics. And then so he doesn't look like the only person left while everybody else is gone and feel like an idiot. He just turns in his test knowing full well he's not done with it and he's not going to pass. Then when he gets told he fails, he starts bawling because now they want to push him back until from accelerated into the lower level on level. And yet he has an 87 throughout the course. But because that one test, and this is why I take issue with greatschools.org and all these various test-taking scenarios, because they rate a school based on the test-taking ability of a child. And a child who hasn't been identified correctly with the issues that they have. And you're going to say your school is good and my school is bad because your school, the kids, third, fourth, fifth graders, are able to take tests better? It's insane. It's insane. Now, how else do you do it? I don't know. But let's start with identifying dyslexic kids and trying to get them the help they need as opposed to putting them into special needs or keeping them back two or three grades so his younger brother can pass them over. I mean, it's insane. How many smart people out there have been called dunce, have been just destroyed with their self-esteem because they thought they were stupid when actually they were smart, but they did not have the skill set or that school did not have the ability to identify it properly. It's a crime. It's a travesty, my friends. And the United States is leaving quality talent on the table. And I think about all these inner city kids. And I brought this up with Karen today. Just no one to advocate for them. Mom's working a couple jobs, trying to raise two or three children on her own. Kid can't read. Kid is getting laughed at when he's got to read out loud. So what does he do? He lashes out. Lashes out. Sad. Breaks my heart. So I talked to Karen Hupperts today. And she's the head of the, like I said, International Dyslexia Association, the Georgia chapter. She actually has written for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, very keen and aware on Lyme disease as well. And so she has two children, both have dyslexia, both are graduating, you know, self-sufficient. But thankfully, her second child was in the shadow, and not in a negative way, but was able to learn about proper skill set when it comes to dyslexia from her first son who had dyslexia, who was unidentified at first, like most kids are particularly. I just want to encourage you, if you think you might have dyslexia, your child does, taking them to school is fine. The school doesn't have the resources to identify it. If you have the resources, go to IDA, and that is going to be, the website is, I'm looking at it right now, this is for the Georgia one, ga.dyslexiaida.org. So Georgia Dyslexia, International Dyslexia Association.org. Again, ga.dyslexiaida.org. It's a tough website. I wish they'd change the URL, frankly. That's for the state of Georgia. The International Dyslexia Association, the website is dyslexiaida.org. So if you go there, you can get a litany, plethora of resources. Dyslexiaida.org, a plethora of resources for you in terms of going to families, dyslexia handbook, conferences and workshop fact sheets, professionals, membership. I'm just resources here. Dyslexia Connections, just reading video library, just tons and tons and tons of stuff, my friends. My two boys have dysgraphia as well, which means they don't write well at all. Dysgraphia and dyslexia may or may not go hand in hand, but generally if you have one, you may have the other. So if your handwriting is really poor, it might be indicative that you have dyslexia, your child does. So go get them tested, not through the school. You don't go to school and start rabble-rousing, say, you just go and say, look, I have a private test where this professional who studies this stuff has identified my child with dyslexia. I need to get on a learning schedule and I need your teachers to cooperate. And by law, they have to, for sure. Now, if you can't afford that, that's an issue that we have to contend with as a society. And this is what I'm hoping to raise awareness on, to think about those little kids in the inner cities and I mean, in rural areas too, don't get me wrong. There's white kids in Appalachia who can't read, whose parents are, I'm just telling you, it's not just the minority kids in inner cities. Lots of forgotten white kids out in the rural areas for sure. Dyslexia transcends race, that's for sure, my friends. It transcends religion, transcends gender. In fact, Karen even says 50-50 roughly. Just boys are probably going to be no more notorious because they're going to lash out. They'll be doped up with ADHD medicine. And then the girls, I don't know. I haven't had a girl with dyslexia at this point, but it just breaks your heart. It breaks your heart. So anything we can do to promote the cause of dyslexia awareness would be a wonderful thing, a benefit to all society, and a benefit to your own tax rates, which is a benefit to your financial plan. All right. I hope you find this helpful. Listen to Karen, Miss Karen. Again, you can put all the show links in the show notes. IDA, International Dyslexia Association, start there. And whatever state you're in, again, she said there's 50 chapters or 44 chapters covering all 50 states. Do yourself a favor and help out, man. I'd love to have you on board to recognize, identify, and hopefully get kids the help they need for dyslexia. All right. We'll see you next time. Don't forget to go to Josh Scanlon, the Josh Scanlon podcast, at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast. Subscribe. Certainly appreciate a review. Frankly, I'm not sure quite how to do that. I guess on iTunes, there's a way to review it there. To be honest, I need to find out. Don't forget to go to Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. And don't forget to also go to heritagewealthplanning.com for all the latest podcasts, videos, and blog posts as well. See you next time on the Josh Scanlon Podcast. Thanks, guys.
So, folks, I have with me here, Karen, how do you say your last name?
Hubbard.
Hoppers, right on, from the Atlanta or the Georgia chapter, right, of the International Dyslexia Association?
Correct.
Okay, and I reached out to Karen just to see if she'd be interested in doing this interview, and she gracefully said absolutely, anything we can do to spread the word about dyslexia. And just going through your blog, Karen, I also saw that you, one of your daughters had a major issue with Lyme disease, which I might ask you about as well. It's ironic, we're just having a discussion with my brother yesterday. He was in town from Richmond, Virginia, and we had a big discussion about Lyme disease. So we'll stay focused on dyslexia, but if you find me throwing your curveball about Lyme disease, I'd like to hear your take on that as well. But
yeah, that's another podcast for sure. It's an complicated issue.
I laugh. I don't laugh at you. I laugh with you, I guess.
If you know anything at all about it, you understand that. It's a very dangerous illness, and more information needs to be out there about it as well.
Kind of like dyslexia is, it's not diagnosed very clearly or properly, I assume, either. I imagine, right?
Right. That's a big problem with dyslexia. Remind me now, the reason you're interested in this.
So my background is, I have four kids, and if Karen, if I ever I break up or you don't hear me, just tell me to repeat myself. I did an interview with a guy about a month ago, and the audio was actually real poor on my end. So if that happens to be the same thing, just let me know if you would, please, okay?
I will.
So what happened was, I have four kids, and one of my boys he couldn't read at all, going to kindergarten, and the kindergarten teacher is always very, very nice, very accommodating. But when we moved down here from South Jersey, right outside Philadelphia, he was just throwing a fit his first couple weeks of school. We'd never seen anything like it, because it wasn't like that in kindergarten. And it just turned out that he just couldn't read. I mean, he couldn't read anything. And he felt like an idiot. There's no other way around that. He felt dismayed and like the biggest stupid kid that you ever could see. And it really set him back emotionally, where his confidence was shot then. And it's not shot the same way, but still it's hard for him to develop a confidence in schoolwork, even though, quote unquote, he'd been able to fix it. But anyway, long story short, after going through the mechanisms of school and just all that, thankfully we have the financial capacity to pay for a private analysis of him, because school just wasn't the company. I don't know if they don't believe in dyslexia. I don't understand it, but they could not say that he had dyslexia. It's almost like, giving a garlic to a vampire. It's weird, actually. They just could not say he did. And so, long story short, we got him a Miss Mary Danilek, or Dane, I can't remember, Dane something, the doctor. She had died. He quickly identified him as dyslexia.
Right.
As opposed to ADHD.
Well, it's actually quite common.
Yeah.
You know, we of course, we haven't been able to test every single child.
Right.
So we can't say definitively. But based on the evidence, we can guess that 15 to 20% of the population is dyslexic. That's a significant number. If you look at autism, which is a much smaller number, maybe less than 5%, right? So, it's a significant, it's almost impossible for a teacher to not have at least one or two children in her classroom who could be dyslexic. So it is a big problem, and your story sounds a lot like my own. The reason I'm involved with the International Dyslexia Association is because I'm a parent, and I knew nothing about dyslexia. My son was in first grade, when his first grade teacher said, something's not quite right here. You know, he was doing poorly on spelling tests. He was reading, but he was sort of slipping behind, getting in the lower and lower reading groups. But he was in the top math group. The teacher knew he was smart. He was intelligent. He was polite and well-behaved and asked intelligent questions. So she knew something wasn't quite right. She allowed me to work with him at home, did some things that she probably wasn't allowed to do, but she let me bring home materials and work with him. But I didn't know anything. I'm not a teacher, and I didn't know anything about dyslexia and to identify it. So he went, he moved on into second grade. Of course, it gets harder, and it became even more obvious that a bigger gap was happening. And my husband and I ended up at a, parent night, and all the children's work was out on the table. They'd been asked to write their parents a letter, and you couldn't help but see the other kids' work. And our son's handwriting and his ability to spell was so obviously far behind his peers that we then knew something wasn't right. So our pediatrician actually led us to a psychologist to test our son outside the school system. And I had not been advised to go outside the school system, but I knew from what the school was telling me that because he technically wasn't behind at that time, I hope it's not this way now, but at the time they were telling me he needed to be two grade levels behind before they would do some intervention and do things like testing. And I thought, well, we can't wait that long. That's ridiculous. So fortunately, our pediatrician sent us to someone to test. He quickly identified that he was dyslexic, just like your son. And we were fortunate to be able to send our son to a school here in the Atlanta area that you may have heard of called the Skank School.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And our son did 2 years there. It was a very, hard thing to do, take your kid out of his public school environment, away from his neighborhood friends. But it was the absolutely right thing for our son. We were fortunate to be able to do it. But I was very, very aware that not everyone has the ability to do that, either financially or even physically, to get your child, many miles away to a school, all the many reasons why it's just not, and the school itself can only take so many students.
Right.
They couldn't possibly help 15 to 20% of the population. They always have a waiting list, and there's not, at that time, there's definitely not enough opportunity. So once I got my own children, actually both of our children are dyslexic. Once we got them through school, I started volunteering with the IDA, and felt like that would be a way that I could, get more teachers trained and more information in parents' hands, and hopefully more and more children helped. So that's my reason for being part of this. So let me let you ask the next question.
Is your daughter the older or the younger of the two that you had?
Our daughter's the younger.
Did she have?
she benefited a lot from what we learned going through everything with our son. And, you know, autism has a spectrum, right? But dyslexia doesn't. But I can tell you, almost every teacher will tell you that dyslexic kids are all slightly different.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, my son is probably more dyslexic than our daughter. But that's not a fair thing to really say. They learned differently. Our son was really faking us out. That's what happened. He has an incredible auditory memory. So if he heard something once, he could spit it back out to you. And, you know, at a young age, when you've got illustrations on the page that you're reading, he thought he was reading, or maybe he thought that's what was reading, but, you know, he knew what the words were on the page because he had heard the story and could associate it with those symbols, with those illustrations. But when you pulled off any word by itself, words he had seen probably thousands of times by second grade, things like the and, just the simplest of words, he had no idea what they were. So he really was very dyslexic. Our daughter, again, we benefited. And part of the problem for our son is he was getting no attention. The curriculum that the schools were using at the time was called whole language. He had no phonics training. And so he had no prayer of a chance to learn how to the way he learns.
Right.
Because the biggest definition, if you will, of dyslexia is that it is a lack of phonological awareness.
Huh.
So kids don't intuitively, who are dyslexic, the kids who are dyslexic don't intuitively associate a sound with a symbol.
Uh-huh.
Now, they can be taught to do that, but they have to be taught a specific way. And they certainly don't pick it up just by chance. A natural reader like myself, I don't remember how I learned to read. Maybe I had phonics when I was young, I don't know, but I certainly don't remember learning the way my children have learned.
Right.
But a natural reader will just sort of intuitively, like one of the ways I like to explain it is, if a natural reader who's been read to or who's been in a reading group and, you know, they've seen words that end in ing all the time, reading, writing, spelling, swimming. They don't have to be told that ing at the end of a word is always going to make the ing sound.
Right.
When you're dyslexic, you have to pull the English language apart and teach that to them. And it's really kind of that basic because the English language is a big puzzle. You know, it's made up of a lot of different other languages, but there are rules, and there's exceptions to those rules, and they have to learn and memorize those exceptions, but a vast majority of it can be taught through those rules, like ing is going to always sound like ing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's the kind of instruction our kids need, and it doesn't hurt any child to learn that way.
Do you think, now, did either you or your husband have some symptoms of dyslexia, you think,
Darren? Interestingly enough, no. My husband and I do not, but it is definitely hereditary.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my brother is probably dyslexic,
okay.
And I suspect my husband's brother is dyslexic. And going back another generation back, it'd be a guess, but I could probably, my dad very well might be. You know, they didn't test, and we still weren't testing, as you know. Consistently in schools. That's one of the things IDA hopes to encourage schools to do is to do assessments and help children get the diagnosis they need so that they can be sure to be getting the kind of instruction that they need.
Well, our assessment consisted of, you know, the teacher, his one teacher in first grade was just a wonderful, wonderful lady, but the assessment was, let's just say you got he had a 5 out of 100, and if you went to 10, you hit 100% increase. But if everyone else has an 80, and they went up 5 points to 85, you know, they had a, whatever that is, 6% increase, whatever. And so the teacher would be like, well, he's improving. He went up 100%. And we're like, yeah, but he's improving from such a low place. And so what would happen was it was starting to become so obvious that the initial recommendations was to put him in with a special needs kid. And we're like, And mind you, he also has a younger brother who's literally a year younger than him, who doesn't have dyslexia, who's, you know, in terms of that kind of structure, is brilliant in that regard. And I just, if we put him back, it's going to kill him emotionally. And so we went to get him tested, and she said no, and she, you know, recommended this teacher who was a retired teacher, Miss Fancy, to teach him Orton Gillingham. And Karen is insane now. I mean, he's reading The Hobbit, you know, from J.R. Tolkien, with that kind of thing.
That's phenomenal.
He's just went from, he's going to sixth grade now. And so what has happened with us is now we identify, my wife in particular, because she's on this like white on rice, and we just identify children that we can see that are probably dyslexic. Now, we don't know the kids specifically, but yet we found, and I want to ask you about that, is that it seems like it's almost a lot of parents are almost hesitant to even say, I want to get this looked at, even if they have the financial wherewithal to look at it. And I don't know why. I don't want to put you on the spot, but any thoughts on that? Because it's not like they have leprosy. I mean, there is a way to fix it, but we just have seen that with some parents that they're just real hesitant to kind of dive a little bit deeper.
Well, no, none of us as a parent wants to think our child is anything less than amazing and perfect, right? And you know, until we get to the point where people understand that dyslexia is not a bad thing necessarily, it's just a different way to learn.
Right.
Until we get that mentality to the general population, then I think, and part of the problem is because of what you just said, if they take a child who has a high intelligence, who oftentimes they're gifted intellectually, and put them in a special education class with children who are, you know, usually those are made of all kinds of different learning differences. But if you put them in those classes where their self-esteem, they know that they're smarter than these kids, maybe, or they know that that's not the struggle they're dealing with, then it sends them that message that they are damaged. So if a parent sees that's what's going to happen to my child, of course they're going to be hesitant.
Yeah.
They're going to do what the teacher may be saying is, let's give it a little more time. You know, you'll hear things like, well, boys learn slower. Well, that's...
Yeah.
Hobbycock. That's ridiculous. Teachers don't want conflict, and they want parents to feel good, too. It's not done out of any kind of malice that they want your child to fall behind. They are trying to be encouraging as well. So, you know, and I think there's even still that stigma, you know, of putting your kid on the short bus.
That's what breaks my heart. I just think of all the kids, you know, just in the past who have dyslexia and were labeled dunces. And it's just how much talent have we lost as a society by all these children. Kills me to think of all the people.
Well, they did a study in the United Kingdom several years ago, and more than 50% of their entrepreneurs are dyslexic.
You probably know
entrepreneurs yourself. Man, a lot of times the people who are risk takers, who think outside the box, those oftentimes are people who maybe didn't do terribly well in school. And if you dig deep enough, you find out they're probably dyslexic. There's a lot of gifted artists. You know, we know a lot of gifted actors and artists and writers. There's actually an amazing number of writers who are dyslexic. There's scientists, surgeons, astronauts. It's wide range of ability and talent, and you're absolutely right. We don't want to squash that.
Well, it's funny because when I did my IQ test on my boy, his IQ was through the roof. I mean, so it wasn't stupid. I mean, and again, it's not saying my kid said it's just at the end of the day, his IQ was incredibly high. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, Karen, he can see stuff in like the screen. And this is what I think is very, very interesting with dyslexia, is actually an advantage in some regard. Because he can see stuff in like a different visual than I can. Like, he can put stuff together with no problem at all. Like, he has the natural ability to see things almost like a 3D, like an architect or something like that.
Right.
And I don't have that ability at all. And yet, and we So we trained him better to read better. And like I said, now he's reading better, but he's still, so he has that talent developing, but he still has his natural born talent, which is where I think, I just hope that we could train teachers and parents in the community as a whole to say, look, your dyslexic kid is not a disadvantage of anything.
No.
It's an advantage.
I will tell you, both of my children will tell you, it certainly makes school challenging because kids do have to work harder oftentimes.
Yes.
Especially
absolutely.
If they don't get the kind of instruction they need. But they wouldn't change. They would trade it. And I would trade it for them.
What are you, if you don't mind me asking, what are your two kids doing now? Are they in college? Are they still high school?
They both have graduated college. They're actually young adults and are starting their careers.
Okay.
Our son graduated with honors from Florida State. He minored in English, of all things.
Yeah.
Our daughter graduated from the University of Georgia and with honors as well. She did freshman year of college. She won a writing award in one of her classes. I mean, they've soared, and both are now working. One's in commercial real estate, and the other is in, he's a social media marketing manager for a company called Rally Health. And they, I think the people who know them would, and know that they're dyslexic, know that that's a part of what makes them successful and helps them think differently. I go to them all the time because they can look at a problem differently than I do.
No, that's 100% right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very good thing.
Now, even when you're able to get them to learn, you know, the different skill set and how to read like a dyslexic kid needs to, they still had challenges in school though. It wasn't all, you know, peaches and cream. They still had different challenges that you and I may have had when we were in school. Under normal, quote-unquote,
Right. Yeah. Well, like, you know, until you get out of elementary school, you're going to always have a spelling test probably once a week.
Right.
And that's the kiss of death for a dyslexic, because a spelling test is really a visual memory test. And especially if you have a spelling list that the words don't have any phonetic connection to each other. You know, a teacher who's trained in phonics would give a test like that maybe all the words do end in ing, or they all use the long e vowel sound, or you know there would be some logic to the test, but so spelling tests are always a challenge. Writing by hand can be a tremendous challenge because of spelling. You know, allowing kids to use different accommodations in the classroom can make all the difference in the world for them. And it's not cheating. It's just letting them show the knowledge that they've gained in a way that's easy for them. So, you know, to write a report on the computer so that they can use spell check is, you know, a valuable tool for them. Of course, and that happens, it depends on the teacher, it depends on the school and the grade level as to what they're allowed to do like that. Reading, you know, using auditory books for reading is a good way for children to have to manage through the assignments that they have. You know, if you're reading Beowulf and you're trying to read it as a dyslexic, you're going to read it, any book, you're going to read any book slower than your peers. That's just a given.
Right.
Because you're having to decode the words, almost all of them, because you don't have that memory bank of words that a natural reader does. So being able to use auditory books is an accommodation that can help students. So, yes, it is always difficult, but they can learn to read. And of course, once you can read, your comprehension of what you're reading usually is improved just because you now can read it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
do you notice with your own children, do they have dysgraphia by chance, Karen? Or have you seen that quite a bit in your studies of dyslexia?
We do see it. My son, I would say, probably has a dysgraphia. He was never technically diagnosed with that, to my knowledge, but his handwriting was certainly challenged. He learned how to write very, very small for some reason to kind of, I think he just did it to hide the fact that he wasn't necessarily forming all the letters, you know, perfectly. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, you know, they use my children use all kinds of tricks. They use their technology, their
right.
Cell phone to spell check words
right.
for themselves. They use, you know, talk to text and back and forth. There's so much great technology out there to help our kids so that it doesn't slow them down any more than necessary. And those are all things that, you know, we hope more schools and more classrooms will allow students to take advantage of.
So if you had a mom and a dad and there's the first child that's in school, for instance, then how would you recommend that they look into maybe getting tested other than, and this is going to sound like I'm blaming the school, but I'm not. I'm not saying that school is evil or anything like that. But at the end of the day, even if it's 2018, the schools still aren't receptive that their kid might be dyslexic.
Right.
So it's really going to have to be fall on the parent. What would you advocate for a parent spanking a baby, but new to school environment with their first child? I'm just using that for anything.
Right. Establishing a good rapport with the teacher is always a good thing because, you know, especially an experienced teacher will notice things. And as long as a parent is, you know, you hear it all the time, the parents, you know, mother's gut, sometimes you know there's something that's not quite right,
right.
and you don't want to put your finger on it. So, if, you know, if a parent suspects something's not quite right, if they talk to the teacher with that open mind, a lot of times the teacher can say, you know, maybe there is something going on here, maybe you should consider an evaluation. But the other, the other thing parents need to recognize is that school systems don't often have access to a lot of psychologists who could do the kind of testing. They may, you know, a school district may have one or two people who can do that testing. So even if the school is capable of doing the testing, it might. I've heard of sometimes parents having to be on a waiting list of 6 months to get their child in.
Yeah, right.
So that's a challenge. There are some psychologists who will do pro bono work, and there are sometimes insurance will pay for testing. So it's always important for a parent if they're going outside the school system, to contact their insurance and see if they will. I didn't personally have that happen. we had to pay for it out of pocket, but I have heard that some can make that happen. And you can always contact IDA. We don't recommend people per se,
right.
but we certainly have a list of people that we know focus on educational testing because different psychologists have different focuses. We can certainly give you some names of people who are doing testing, and then you can contact them. Same goes for providers of tutoring services or, remediation programs. Our goal is to make sure that a parent doesn't get off on the wrong track and have somebody, you know, try to sell them glasses to fix dyslexia. We don't want to necessarily recommend one program over another,
right.
but we can tell you the ones that meet the IDA's knowledge and practice standards for quality instruction.
And you can also say we have a list. IDA has a list of people who focus that can do the testing specific for dyslexia, not just general
Correct.
Practitioners, but the special. Okay, guys, because that's
right. Right.
That's
so
what
if you go to our website, which is ga.dyslexiaida.org, you'll see a tab that's titled Families.
Yeah.
And let's see, I'm on the wrong website, or I'll tell you what it's. But
yep.
there is a provider list that you can click on, and then you can look for. It's a parents tab, actually. And if you go down, there's a lot of information there. We keep trying to add as much as we can to help parents. But there's a provider directory. And within that, you can look at schools. And the professional tab will list psychologists as well as tutors and tutoring centers and things like that that are all have been qualified to be part of that list. Yeah.
And I'll... folks, I'll put that link in the show notes as well with the IDA and then, of course, the Georgia chapter. Are there chapters in all 50 states, Karen?
No. We have 44 branches.
Okay.
It's interesting. We have four different branches in the state of California, but Minnesota, North, and South Dakota are one branch.
Okay.
So we do cover the entire U.S., but some of the, you know, some of the states have more than one. Some are combined. We also have 31 global partners now. So, so if you know anyone listening to your blog is moving to another country, we have partners in those countries who can help, you know, make sure you get to a qualified instructor or school for remediation.
Actually, speaking of which, that's interesting. How does the U.S., I mean, this will be your personal opinion, not necessarily on behalf of IDA, but how does the U.S. rank in terms of identifying and helping with dyslexia relative to, you know, some of the other, you know, westernized or whatever?
Well, I'd like to think we're good at it, but I know we have a long way to go because, you know, I talk to parents probably weekly who are, you know, who know there's something going on, who had to go outside the school system to get their child assessed and diagnosed. And part of the problem is schools in general don't like to be in the diagnosis business.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. They don't need a lawsuit if some, you know, they're not medical professionals. So, you know, we're trying to get them to be comfortable with the word dyslexia, but you know what? You can call it whatever you want to. You can call my child a struggling reader. As long as you help him with the right instruction, I don't care. You can call him, you know, Bozo. I don't care, but as long as you're nice about it, you know. But the bottom line is help him learn to read because he can. He can learn because there is good quality instruction out there. And the other frustrating thing for me that I learned in this process, and I actually only figured this out 4 or 5 years ago, because I'm not an educator myself. I didn't go to school to learn to teach children. But what I've learned is that most universities who are teaching students to come out as an early education major, as an undergraduate student, they don't teach them how to teach reading. They teach them a lot of very important things, but they don't actually teach them, they don't give them instruction on how to teach reading. I know that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I think it is crazy.
Yeah.
And we're working on that. IDA nationally is certifying university programs as well that do teach, you know, and even some of the ones that do have good programs, they've relegated it to the special education majors, not to the general classroom.
But I'll guess. So they don't teach them how to read. They assume that the kid can. That's just odd. Why would they learn to teach them how to read? Again, they're assuming that it's happened at the house or something like that? Or what?
I can't answer the why. I just know that's what's happening. And you can. I guarantee you if you go to your child's school and you chatting with your teacher, you can say, did they teach you how to teach reading? I'd be very surprised if she says yes. Most of the time, teachers have to go back and do a special, they end up getting a special instruction as a reading specialist, or they take additional classes past their bachelor and master's degrees before they get to that.
What's the breakdown of dyslexic kids, girls versus boys? Is it predominantly boys?
It's about half and half. What can happen, though, is sometimes girls can hide it longer than boys can. But really, in every testing situation we've seen, it's about 50-50.
I was thinking the girls can hide it longer because boys get diagnosed with ADHD or something like that, right? Is that what you're seeing?
Well, that can happen too, and that can coexist with dyslexia.
Yeah.
But girls can be ADHD as well, so it really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not more prevalent. It's pretty even.
I just. History suggests that, you know, boys are more rambunctious and they more or less likely to hide it. in the back of the classroom and more likely to act out, and thus they're going to be labeled as, you know, hyper ADHD.
Yeah, and that can be true for any child, but yeah, one way of avoiding getting attention, you know, taking attention away from the fact that you don't want to be the one called on to read
exactly. In class
is you become the class clown, or
you
become that behavior problem in some way, you know, and maybe some students will just try to be very shy and hide in the corner and not raise their hand, and you know, there's all kinds of strategies that, you know, children don't know they're doing it, but they're trying to find a way to not be that kid who has to stumble through reading a paragraph in class, because that's one of the hardest things for a dyslexic student to do is read out loud.
So one of my big problems or wonders I have on this is, you take a lady, a single mom raising two or three kids in you know, South Atlanta, doesn't have the resource to get a kid tested at a school, Fulton County. I'm in Fulton County, but North Fulton County is not the same as South Fulton County. They don't have the resources, and yet one of their kids is quote-unquote a problem child, and it turns out if he only could have got tested, they could have fixed it. How does this, I mean, this is going to sound very, I don't know, cryptic in some regard, but how many, we're just going to lose a ton of kids because they're not being identified. How do we as a society, we can't force a mom to test, I get that, but man, how is she going to spend $1,500 to get her kid tested when school's
on? Right. It's very hard. I don't have great answers for you. That is part of why IDA, you know, we're a nonprofit. We're run by volunteers. And so, you know, the more things like this that we can do, talking to you, getting the word out there, more teachers here. Because what I've found is every time a teacher is exposed to information about dyslexic students and the right instruction, I am not making this up. Every single time I've seen a new teacher exposed to this, they go, why didn't somebody tell me
that? That's 100% right, yeah.
So the more teachers who can know, because, you know, we want not only the remediation and the instruction in the school, but we want schools to be able to do assessments to identify those kids who are potentially dyslexic.
They're the boots on the ground, Nancy. They're the ones who see it firsthand, other than bringing some administrator from the county headquarters to come in once every 3 months. I mean, the teacher knows what's going on.
Yeah, it's vitally important. Texas did a study, and it's probably been quite a few years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, and I don't remember which part of Texas. Don't quiz me on that, but I know I've seen the study. They went to one prison system in the state and did testing to see how many of those were dyslexic, and it was dramatic.
How many
incarcerated individuals couldn't read.
Are you from Texas by chance? Where are you from?
I'm not. No, my husband
is. No, I think I'm familiar with that. Say the least, it's a shock. Is IDA, you said, is a 501(c)(3) or 501(c)(3)?
Yeah, okay, 501(c)(3), yeah. So we accept donations. We accept volunteers who want to help us. We do what we do nationally, as well as we do have a small staff in Baltimore where our home office is, but all our branches are run by volunteers. So all 44 branches have just passionate people who are, most of the time, they're educators themselves, oftentimes they're also dyslexic. Sometimes they're parents like myself. Sometimes they are grandparents who've watched a child come through this process. But they are all passionate volunteers who believe that more children should have the opportunity to be successful, and reading is an essential part of that.
Well, I'm just going to... Oh, go ahead.
No, I think we really all believe it's a civil right to be able to read.
Well, the one thing I'd say real quick, Nancy, is from a financial planning perspective, given that the IDA, and, you know, any dyslexic, you know, I guess, was it SWIFT here in Roswell and Skank there in Atlanta, I imagine they can all take donations, but if you're over the age of 70 and a half, folks, and you have required minimum distributions, RMDs, Now that President Obama, with John Boehner, bipartisan legislation, signed the Qualified Charitable Distributions, QCD rule, you can give your RMD up to $100,000 directly to a charitable entity, like the IDA.
That would be phenomenal to have that opportunity.
Absolutely. There's no 1099. I mean, there's no paperwork to file. You don't get a 1099, and you have to offset it with a 498 or anything like that. It's a wonderful thing, like you said, Nancy, Karen, about your grandkids.
Right.
If you
right.
see your grandkids, you're like, man, I know there's got to be kids in the inner city. It doesn't have to be the inner city, but just if you know there's struggling kids out there, and it doesn't take a rocket science to figure young boys, I'm just focused on boys, girls, same thing, but boys are going to lash out, and they're going to be a problem for society, and, as
well,
said by your testimony.
Well, and what you said, your son, you could see his self-esteem being damaged. I know individuals, we do free community outreach events all over the state, a lot of them in the metro Atlanta area, and we, you know, a lot of times there are topics like what is dyslexia? Just, you know, we have parents and teachers who come to these, and we will just give them the basics, you know, what it looks like, what can be done about it, all that, other topics, but every single time we're there, a parent will come up to me afterward and say, you know what? I was never good at school. I think I'm dyslexic. And,
yes.
And you hear this all the time. There's a celebrity recently who said he found out he was dyslexic because his son was diagnosed. And it happens all the time where people have, and that's another reason I think parents sometimes are hesitant, because if they struggled at school, they don't want to slow their child down. They're hopeful. They don't want their child to have the struggles they had. But the best thing to do is to get them the right help.
Absolutely.
If you can, you know. But, yeah, so identifying is so important. I wanted to just make sure you knew IDA does provide information and referral. People can contact us, email us. We have a Facebook account and Pinterest, and we're on LinkedIn for the professionals. We're on Twitter. We do provide professional education conferences every year. This year was in March. We have the national organization has a large conference every year. It was actually here in Atlanta last November.
Oh.
And it'll be in Connecticut this year. It's at the end of October. We'll do another Georgia conference sometime next February or March. We haven't picked the date yet. And we do scholarships for teacher training because we also do an event every year, and you need to bring your son and come to this.
Yeah.
It's called the Dyslexia Dash. It's a 5K run walk. We do it at Perimeter Mall this year. It's on October 20th. And we had about 1,500 people participate in this last year. It's a fun, fun morning, very family oriented. It's a Peachtree Road Race qualifier. And the money we raise for that, we put all back into teacher training. So we provide scholarships. There's information about that on our website as well. And we want teachers to get trained, and there's lots of training available.
Yeah.
And this is the time of year when teachers are looking to do it too, because they have a few weeks off for the summer, so they can.
And they want to help the teachers want to help. They see the kids struggling. They want the resources to be able to help the child. It's not
they
like
do.
They're.
They
don't
do.
Want the help. They do. They just need the resources, the know-how.
Yeah, I will. Very angry parent when my child was first diagnosed. I was very angry at the school and at the teacher, and because you want to be angry at somebody.
Yes.
It's almost like a grieving process.
It really is.
It took me quite a few years to realize the teachers were wanting to help my child. They just didn't necessarily know how to. So I like to always say, you don't know what you don't know. But every teacher I've ever seen get the proper instruction, and they take it back to their classroom. They are so grateful because now they can help those kids that they knew were going to fall through the cracks.
Exactly. The last thing I'll let you go, if you follow me, is I'll give you a chance to say whatever else you want to. But just going back to my kid, and this is, you know, I hate to sound so selfish, but I imagine that it's going to happen with any kid out there. So, you know, he's flying colors through math, but math consists of word problems, and word problems take longer. So he has as long as he needs to study or to take the test. He's got an 87 in math, and yet when it came time to actually give him that extra time to need, because it takes a dyslexic kid longer to comprehend, that's the nature of the beast.
Right.
They shut him down on his test. He failed it. And so he is just, he was crying. He's like, because now they want him to go back from advanced, or I can't remember, the three of them, advanced, accelerated, then on level. And he was in, you know, the one of them, I can't. But they want him to go back because of this one thing. I said, my wife and I are just like, this is exactly what is not supposed to happen with a dyslexic.
No, did he have an RTI?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The response to intervention, does he have an RTI?
We call it, isn't it like an IEP or something like that? I forgot what they call it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, IEP, you start with the RTI and then you go to the IEP. But if did he have either?
Oh, yeah. No, we did all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay, well then, so within that, there should be accommodations that he is supposed to be, that you can request, and that based on his diagnosis, he should be allowed to have. That's part of the process. And one of the things he could ask is for those word problems to be given to him orally, separately.
I guess the question, though, I keep wanting to call you Nancy, because Nancy's his tutor who helps him with dealing him, but Karen, what if they don't? I mean, that's what I'm going like. It's not. I don't think it's, again, I don't think it was evil. I just
You do have rights. Okay. I mean, we like to call it a learning difference, but it technically, legally, is a learning disability, which means you have, your child has legal rights under the Disabilities Act. So there are, you do have rights to go in and say, you know, this is not legally now. We have had a few parents who have to go as far as working with an attorney to get the school to understand that they have those rights. It's nice if you can avoid getting to that confrontation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But we have, I can send you information, or I believe we have information on our website about advocating for your child, and there should be some links to Rights Law, W-R-I-G-H-T-S,
okay.
Law, and those will give you some guides. Well, yeah, that is on here, Rights Law.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, and there's good guidelines on how to step through that process so that you can force the school to do what they know, what they maybe don't know they should be doing. But providing accommodations is the easiest and least costly thing for a school to do. So it's in the school's best interest to cooperate and give your child every opportunity to show whatever the assignment is. If it's learning how to do a particular type of math, that's where we've gotten lost as a society on what's the point of a test.
Right.
You know?
I completely agree with that.
Yeah,
I mean, just
sometimes.
Getting... Which is sad in a way, but the reason I want to bring that up is not for what was us, is that if it can happen to us where the school is supposed to do something, and they just neglected to. And again, I'm not going the route of saying it's nefarious. I just think everybody else was done. You know, you said you have 15 minutes left. He's like, you know, 5 minutes left. They start freaking out. And we've told them over and over, you know, you don't have 5 minutes left. You have as long as it takes. That's the way it is written up according to the rules of the road here. But you're still putting on the kid to kind of make the teacher aware.
And that's hard. That is one thing we do encourage I very much encourage my kids as they moved into some degree into middle school, but definitely by high school, they had to learn how to advocate for themselves.
Yeah,
they had to know how to go to their teacher and say, look, I'm dyslexic. I'm listening and I'm doing the work, but I'm slower. You know, sometimes our children would ask for a word bank so that they wouldn't have to try to figure out how to spell a word. They could look, you know, there are all kinds of different things that accommodations that they can asked for. We just posted on our website under Advocating for Your Child, I believe. We added a Preparing Your Child for College.
Oh.
And some of the things that are listed in that as suggested accommodations also can apply to your child at a younger age, like extra test time, or having the test read to them, all those kind of things. They're not cheating. That's the problem. The teacher or the administration in the school thinks, well, that's giving an unfair advantage to a child that our regular student doesn't have. Well, if your child over here can't walk, do you not give them a wheelchair?
Right.
You know?
Not fair. Right.
Right. You have to think about it and get them to understand that this isn't an effort to cheat. It's an effort to level the playing field.
Well, Karen, this is fantastic. I need to just stop this before my software. I got 8 minutes left of my software before it cuts me out. So you have plenty of time. But can you share any last thoughts? And I'll put the links on the website, the Facebook, all that. But you know, just if anyone who's listening out there, a parent who might be struggling, just whatever is on your mind, Karen, would you just share with us some of the last
thoughts? I appreciate that. First of all, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I would say to parents, first of all, help you. That's what we're here for. Our goal is to help teachers, families, and professionals who are related to struggling readers. But I always want to encourage parents because I remember the sleepless nights I had before my son was diagnosed. I probably went about 6 months not sleeping, worrying about him, and wondering what I was not doing to help him and you know, what was going to happen to his future. And I can tell parents that their kids are amazing and that, they will get through this. And by the time they get to college is easy because it doesn't work the same way. College is much easier for dyslexic kids. So just hang in there and be persistent and don't get lost in just the academics. I always like parents to remember to focus on those other talents and gifts that their child has, like you mentioned, that, you know, your child is good, maybe going to be an architect someday. I bet he's great with Legos.
Oh, you got it. Absolutely.
You know, focus on those things. Sometimes they're great athletes. Sometimes they're great artists. Don't let every spare minute of their time outside of school be also about school, because you've got to form that whole child.
I could not agree with that more. Well, thank you so much, Karen. I really appreciate it. And what I do is I just put a little blog blurb on this, a little introduction blurb, and I'll send you the link to it. And you know, anything that you want me to fix or anything, it's pretty cut and dry. But so much. Thanks for keeping me in the loop of what you're doing here. This is wonderful, ma'am. I'm so excited to have this opportunity.
All right, well, we'll talk about Lyme disease another day.
You got it. Thanks, Karen. Have a good evening.
Actually, I have a great doctor who would be perfect for you to talk to. He and I have done a podcast previously on Lyme disease.
I will be in touch with you on that. Absolutely.
I'll try to find a link and send you the link on it, and then you can, if you'd like to, maybe get us both on the phone.
All right, well, I'll follow up on the email to you here later on this evening. I appreciate it, Karen. You're the best. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.